Okay, the fourth aliyah of Parshas Noach is incredibly significant, and Revi in general, our topic for this year, so Revi is by its nature mathematically placed in the middle of the Parsha, and here this is very much a bridge aliyah, that we know that Noach is most well known for the topic of the flood, but the flood is not at all the whole Parsha, and this basically breaks the Parsha up into two halves. So before this is the flood and that which came with it, and everything that is post-diluvian, this is the mid-range between the antediluvian and the post-diluvian parts of the Parsha, so that which is going to come later, and Migdal Bavel and all of that, that is after. But this aliyah is the transition from the flood time to what comes after. And what's very important and very significant and really the theme of this aliyah is that it doesn't happen automatically. It's not just, okay, there was a flood, then it's over, and then it's after the flood. But rather, there is a intentionality that has to come along with it. And that is really probably an appropriate description of this entire aliyah. And there's much to say about that, about what is involved now in reconstructing society. Society has essentially been wiped out, and now it has to be rebuilt. And we'll see that that's really the theme of everything that we're seeing here, that it is direct messaging on that point about what's involved in bringing that about. So the aliyah begins, Vayedaber Elokim el Noach lemor, Tzeh min ha-teva. So here, there is an instruction to leave the teva. And that already is indicating what it was referring to, that this isn't something that was just obvious automatically, even though one could have thought that it should have been. So there was a test, an experiment conducted to find out if the waters had receded. And therefore, the Medrash Tanchuma tells us that the sons of Noah said to him that, you see, the land is dry. You see, now it's safe to go out. So why don't you just go out? And Noah himself said, no, I came in on God's instruction, and we're going to leave on God's instruction. I'm not just going to decide on my own that we're leaving, but we have to get the official word. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu hears this, and he responds with the command, yes, go out to the teva. And this leaving of the teva is enormously significant. And there is a medrash in the Shir HaShirim, which relates that Avram eventually asks Malki Tzedek, who was Shem, who was one of the travelers on the teva, and he asked him, how did you have this chus to leave the teva? And Shem, Malki Tzedek, responds about how they did staka on the teva. And Avram is a little baffled by that. He says there weren't different sectors of society with you on this boat. You didn't have poor people and rich people. So how are you involved in staka? And he responds, we took care of all of the animals. We did all of that was actually counted as staka. And this is enormously consequential, because we know that Avram Avinu, and we'll read more about it next week and certainly the week after, is the Amud HaChesed, who essentially in 2 weeks from now, the Torah is going to tell us that he earns the schus of being the ancestor of the Jewish people because of his devotion to Chesed. So according to this statement, this story in the Medrash, he was inspired by this, that he heard the family of Noah saying that we took care of the animals. And all the more so, you can imagine, to take care of people is even loftier. And this is what got them the schus to leave the teva. So Avram is inspired by this, and the rest is history. The rest is our history. The rest is everything that characterizes our mission in this world. So that's incredibly significant. There was also the detail that he throws in, that one day out of all the time they spent taking care of the animals, one day Noah was late, and that's where he got this injury from a lion. And that was the consequence he paid for not being perfect in the care. It was almost perfect, and being this one little deficiency in the care of the animals ended up impacting him that way. So Avram is tremendously inspired by this, and he remarks that this is something to learn from. So the whole question is interesting, because to say, why do you have the schus to leave the teva? Presumably that was the whole point, right? It wasn't a jail sentence. The point was that his family is protected in the teva during this cataclysmic event that is destroying the rest of the world. And of course, when time comes, they're going to come out of the teva, and that was the whole point. They were being protected from this. So the idea, like, you need to be paroled. What schus did you have to get paroled, to get released, to have your punishment end? Where exactly does that come from? And this is a topic that Rav Shiva Karmi Avna, Rav Goldach, Zichrono Lebracha, was very much enamored by and spoke about at length. And it really connects to so much else about the parasha and about everything before it and after it. Because we know that the world was in bad shape, and Noah himself was not perfect. And this is something perhaps come back to a little bit later, but poor Noah has the most complicated PR of any biblical figure, perhaps, because you read the Psukim and Chumash, it sounds like he was perfect, it sounds like he was literally Tamim, Tzadik, it sounds like he was perfect, and yet Chazal are always down on him, that every statement that the Torah says, praising Noah, so Chazal come in and say, oh, he wasn't so great, he was only relatively great, he was missing in this area, etc., etc. And what seems to be driving that is the idea that Noah was relatively better than everybody else, but he wasn't involved in making a difference to people, and he didn't have an impact on anyone else around him. And this is contrasted to his discredit with Avram, and then later Moshe, who's even better, who is self-sacrificing on behalf of his constituency, and Noah was very much not there. So the Psukim sounds so praising of him, and Chazal always take it in a different direction, or consider it to be taken in a different direction. The clue is not from these Psukim, but from the Haftorah, where the Haftorah refers to the flood as Mei Noach, kind of blaming it on him. You would think it should be called Mei everyone but Noach. Noach was the one who survived. So there is the tradition that Noach didn't do enough, maybe wasn't capable of doing enough, to have an impact on the people around him. And therefore, the teva was actually meant to be a learning experience. And again, this is a theme that Rav Shiva was very into, because the comparison between the teva and the yeshiva is often drawn in this context as comparable to the teva, so we go into this isolation, and we learn to be better people, and we learn to be more active on behalf of others, and therefore this whole idea that he's sort of practicing, he's helping the animals, which is inherently valuable, but also this is cultivating this sense of chesed within him. So the whole notion that we have that chesed, Avraham Avinu would come to model, that chesed is both something that is inherently valuable, but also something that builds upon itself, that the more you train it as a muscle, the more you are able to both become greater at chesed and ultimately be more perfectly reflective of the divine image. The Torah tells us, v'halachta b'drachav, at least 8 times, different versions of that. And the Gemara understands a number of places that the idea of following God's ways means to become a chesed person, and this is what Avram recognized. And here he's inspired by Noach. So Noach has to learn that. Noach has to develop this in a more active sense. So this was his base medrash. This was his experience in the teva, that he had to cultivate that chesed model every day. God put him in a position to work on this rachmanis, work on this sense of nesina, and that was a very powerful corrective for him and for all of humanity, because as we noted Tuesday night, the well-known blame for the whole destruction in the first place, so Chazal tell us that it was tied to Gezel, to taking from others, even though there were so many other things going on, the Gezels really sealed their fate. And the Koach HaNesina is the opposite of Gezel. So Gezel is you're all about yourself and you want to take from others. And to be able to give to others and to recognize the needs of those around you is the opposite Midah of Gezel. So this Teva created an environment for Noach personally, but also representing all of humanity, to change the direction of what was going on. And that's enormously significant. So therefore, that's the question that Avram is asking. When did you earn your parole? How did you get released? What was the schus? It wasn't so obvious that, okay, so you're sheltered, and then when it's over, you come out. But there's a process here that has to happen in order to allow this new stage to take place and the rebuilding to begin. Yedidra?
So basically, like, the animals in the Teva weren't just like, okay, to keep the animals, you know, species, whatever, going.
Yeah.
But it was like, really, to teach Noah.
Exactly, which is a fascinating idea, right? So you might think, okay, so why are all the animals put here? So they're here because we need to have specimens in order to be able to then create them anew. To let them to reproduce from here on in so the species should survive. And maybe it's more than that. Maybe that this was a part of the necessary format so that Noah himself could develop into somebody more worthy. And this is also related to the rest of the pasuk here, Ata v'ishtacha. So Rashi quotes in the Yerushalmi, Maseches Tainis, that now there is a Heter Tashmish. Rashi told us earlier in the parasha that within the Teva itself, there was a prohibition of Tashmish, and now it's Mutter again. And the Torah Tamima has a discussion about, is this a Rishus, is this a Chiyuv, why does this have to be conveyed specifically? And he suggests that maybe there was a lot of unclarity as to what's happening now. Okay, so is the world being rebuilt? Is that the mission, that now you can go and start rebuilding the population again? There needed to be some clarification that that was the message. But also, the Rashiva noted about this as well, that you could say, why did there have to be anything said? Okay, so even if there was an Isser in the time of the Teva, so that's consistent with things that we find elsewhere, that when there's Piranius coming to the world, or when it's a Shast Sora, so also there are various statements in Shast that that's not a time for a Tashmish or for family building. But you'd understand that when the crisis is over, so then that's no longer applicable. So pointed out, no, it's not so self-understood, because again, just like leaving from the Teva is not so obvious, is not something that can be taken for granted, so too, there has to be a specific instruction. And indeed, the next pasuk makes that clearer. Kol achaya asher itcha v'kol basar ba'ofu v'heimu v'chol haremes haromes al aretz hitzei itach v'shartzu ba'aretz v'chartzu v'ravu al haaretz. So you should go and bring about reproduction of people and of animals, and you should start populating the world. And indeed, so here I'll pick up on the fact that that seems to be a little bit disorganized. It's not clear what the order is there. So Noah and his sons and his wife and their sons, and that's contrasted with the next pasuk where the animals seem to come out more organized. That it says Kol Achaya, Kol Haremes, Kol Ha'Of, Kol Haremes, Kol Ha'Aretz, Mishpachoseihem, Yotzim in a Teva. They all came out in perfect order. And the Gemara picks up on that. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Adav Kol Ches, the Gemara says that Eliezer asked Shem, so what was going on? It sounds like you guys were all a mess and the animals were all organized. And he responded, yeah, we had to work to take care of everybody. It wasn't a simple situation. And this is also continuing the same theme, something that she discussed as well. Eric.
Wait, so how would they know about Tashmish not being allowed in turn time? Was that like it's intuitive, or like they had learned the course that we would then turn into?
So that gets into all kinds of fascinating questions about what was known and what Chazal also tell us that Noah learned Torah. Right. So what exactly that means in the pre-Abrahamic era, or pre-Sinaitic era, is open to a lot of discussion. It's a fair question, but that involves all kinds of other things to try to figure out. But So that's all a great question, and what exactly that means, there's a lot to delve into. It seems like it has to do, at that point, with trying to figure out what makes sense as a reflection of acting properly in the world. And therefore, there is a certain intuitive aspect here, but either way, if the idea was, even if it was conveyed more directly, but still, it seems logical that it's tied into the situation, and when the situation is over, one would assume that it's no longer the case. So this assumption that, no, it's not so obvious, that's itself probably consistent with what we've been seeing so far. And then the next pasuk goes on to tell us, "Ve'even Noach mizbeach la'ashan, ve'yikach mikol abehema ha'tahora mikol ofatar ve'al olos b'mizbeach." So here he builds a mizbeach and he brings karbanos. And Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch has a whole discussion here about talking about the nature of the mizbeach and Jewish avoda. And it's fascinating because here we're not talking about Jews, we're talking about the Davka of Noah, who's identified with the whole world population. We don't even know if Avram was Jewish, certainly not Noah. But still, he talks about the differences between a Jewish approach to Avoda and a general, more pagan approach. And the idea, first of all, that a mizbeach has to be constructed, that we don't offer at a matzeva, we don't take just a natural stone and start bringing offerings on that, but it has to be built, and the whole notion of building onto nature and creating a ladder, creating a greater proximity to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and recognizing that that's the role here, to elevate the world from its natural state and to connect to God's presence and all of that. He has a whole long essay about this, how that's conveyed here in the construction of the Mizbeach. But one could also ask an interesting question about just how meaningful karbanos are in this particular point. So, in general, the notion of a sacrifice, as we call it in English, is that the person is giving up something of his, and therefore it's meaningful. I think we've mentioned here, this year, if not, certainly mentioned in the past, that the idea that gezel is excluded from karbanos, that you can't bring a karban that you have stolen, so that fits with the notion of mitzvah habavi avera. You don't do mitzvahs through stealing or through other transgressions. But, as noted, there's something even more fundamental when it comes to karbanos, that if one were to steal a karban and offer that and think he's accomplishing something, it's not just a mitzvah habavi avera. That's something which shows you don't understand the whole notion of a karban, because what do you think is happening when you're bringing a sacrifice? Do you think that God is hungry and he needs the meat, so therefore, however you're able to get it to him, he's going to be happy with that? It doesn't matter whether you steal it or whether you have to commit whatever other aveiros in order to bring it about. As long as you get God his meal, he's going to be happy, and that's going to be enough. So clearly that's not what's going on. The notion is that it comes from one's desire to sacrifice, to be closer to God. So if you think you can steal a karban and that's somehow going to make sense, it shows you not only trying to do a mitzvah through an avera, but that the whole notion of what a korban is not clear to you, and it's an insult to God to see it that way. So here, no, it's not stealing, but one could argue that how meaningful is this? So he doesn't have personal property, that he's giving an animal that he owns and he's sacrificing. So what exactly does that accomplish? So it could be that this is also a continuation of the previous theme. Because you could also ask that we see that these karbanos are apparently successful, and the next pasuk tells us that it has an impact or some connection to the fact that humanity is going to be more secure in the future. So maybe the whole world would have been better off if Noah had thought of this before the Mabul, and he could have offered these karbanos and had the same effect. So presumably this is all a continuation of what we're saying, that it's not necessarily that they are his animals that he's giving up, but because he has taken care of them, so he's developed a sensitivity and appreciation for the well-being of these animals. You know the famous idea of ahav, that the ahava comes from giving. The more you take care and lavish attention on something, the more you come to love it. So that whole recognition that he developed this sensitivity and this ability to give, and now to bring that as a karban, so that has a significance both as far as it being something sacrificial, but also this wasn't a potential possibility before the Mabul. It's dafka now, at this stage, that one can have that kind of impact. So it sounds like it does indeed have a result, because the next pasuk goes on to say, V'yarach Hashem Mitzriach HaNichoach, so God is impressed by this, V'yomer Hashem Elivo Lo Sif L'Kalul Od Es HaAdama Bavur HaAdam, Ki Yitzer Lev HaAdam Raminu Rav, Lo Sif Od HaKos Es Kol HaChai Kasher Asisi. So this pasuk really has so much to unpack, right? So much just in this one pasuk by itself, so much to try to understand, so much that's challenging. A little bit of it is evocative of some of what we spoke about last week and some of what we saw with the whole relationship with Cain and Hevel and the whole dialogue that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had with Cain. Some of this sounds a little bit evocative of that, and maybe in a different direction. But so, first of all, the idea that God is impressed, we also have to understand in the context of what we just said a minute ago, because the pasuk sounds a little bit subject to misinterpretation. Oh, God smelled a nice aroma, so maybe it does sound like he had a good meal, but if it doesn't, it's clear you understand that that's not what it means, but that he recognizes that this conveys something significant from the one who is offering it, and who's offering it on behalf of humanity. So this step now, that things are going to be different from here on in, so that is a very crucial message. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares, La'osif l'kal odas adama. So I'm not going to curse the land again in the same way. So there's a lot of ambiguity about the nature of this promise, and what exactly is being conveyed here. In fact, there's discussion about this in the Shuvah's Binyan Zion, who notes that there are conflicting Gemaras as to what the intent is. Is he saying that I'm not going to destroy the world at all in any fashion, so it sounds like from the Gemara in the end is Zvachim? Or does he mean specifically about through water? That's what it sounds like from the Gemara in Sota and Da'afir Aleph. But it sounds like on one way or another, one level or another, that there is a major shift here, and that it is a result of the shift in attitude by this new lone representative of humanity. Now, there's a machlokes in how to interpret the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos in the third parak, which it says, Hakol Tzafoi v'Rashus Nesuna Tov Ha'olam Nidon V'Hakol L'Firov Hamasa. So the Mishnah says that everything is foreseen, and yet we are given the permission to act as we do choose to, and the world is judged with good, the Tov, V'Hakol L'Firov Hamasa. It's also assessed based on the majority of actions. So you add up to a tzaddik or rasha based on the majority. So there's a machlokas, the Rambam and Rashi, how to read that. There's also a very often quoted statement, the Rambam, on that idea of a kolofi rov hamasa, which we'll come back to in a later context, or we'll actually just mention briefly now, because it's actually relevant to what we said before. This is where the Rambam makes the comment that it's worth doing acts of chesed repeatedly, even if it adds up to the same. It's worth doing it in many different actions. And he makes that comment there, very widely quoted, that if somebody has a certain amount of money to give to tzedakah, it's going to be the same amount no matter what, but it's better to give it many smaller gifts that all add up to the same thing rather than one gift, because every act of tzedakah is something that influences your personality and that helps to contribute to your being a person of giving and a generous individual in the image of God. So that's consistent with what we've seen here, that that was what the impact of the table was. But as far as the rest of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that the world is judged for good and everything is judged based on the actual majority of one's actions, whether it's viewed qualitatively or quantitatively, but somehow we come to a rov, and that's how people are judged. So Rashi says there's a difference here. People are judged based on the fair evaluation of what's the majority of their impact and of their actions, while the world has a special chesed that is given more leeway, and the world is judged l'tov despite that. But the Rambam Hilchos Teshuva, he seems to sound like, no, the world is also based on that standard. There's a whole discussion about this in the Sefer Som Derech, the Simchas Zos L'Brady, and the Haris on the Chumash and the Ramban largely, and in the back of the Sefer, there are longer essays. So there's a longer essay about this in the back, a very major issue, how exactly to assess how the world is now being evaluated, how the world is being evaluated in general, and what exactly that message is. But one way or another, there's some kind of a promise here that this isn't going to happen again. And it actually comes up again in the Haftorah. So the Haftorah, again, the linkage of the Haftorah, every Parsha, we have a Haftorah that's supposed to reiterate the things of the Parsha. Here, there's a particularly strong linkage between, a particularly strong synergy in terms of understanding what's going on in our Parsha, the Parsha with the Haftorah. As I mentioned before, that the language of Menoach is the big clue in the Torah Shebichsav of any kind of doubt of Noach's righteousness. So here too, the Haftorah is significant because the Haftorah has another promise of not doing this again. And according to the Gemara, Maseches Shavuos and Daf Lamed Vav, this is the enduring promise. This is the promise that actually lasts. Because the Gemara in Bava Basra says that there was a Havamina that what was said here should be revoked, wasn't necessarily going to last. The Kosh Baruch Hu wanted to do a Hataras Nadarim. There's a whole discussion about this in the Sefer Chavetzalos HaSharon al HaTorah. I mean, how could this promise be revoked? We know we have a tradition that a positive nevuah never gets revoked, that a negative nevuah can get revoked because the people can do tshuva, as we see. But a negative nevuah doesn't get revoked. So what exactly is the Havamina here? So as he notes, the Rambam explains that whole policy, that the idea of a nevuah being irrevocable is because it's a test for a Navi Sheker. That if you want to know if a Navi is real or not, so you have to see if he makes predictions, if they come true, he's real. If not, then he's a Navi Sheker. But we have to still allow for tshuva, so therefore it's got to be possible that if he makes negative prophecies and they turn out not to become true, that maybe it's because there was tshuva. So you can't say that calls into question his prophecy. This is a whole phenomenon we see in general, everyone who makes predictions of doom, and this is coming, and that's coming, and then it doesn't happen, and then how exactly that impacts on their status. This is how some of the earliest studies in cognitive dissonance were carried out, Davka, in this context. Leon Festinger, I think his name was, who ran studies on cults that had a belief the world was going to end on this day, and then it didn't end, and they lose their faith. They didn't lose their faith. They found a way to redefine it. It didn't mean that. People did tshuva, okay, so whatever it is. So that is always a way to undo it. But when it comes to a positive nevuah, so it's supposed to stick. So the point is he explains that that's assuming it's a test for the Navi, so it has to be something that was conveyed to the public. So here, it's not clear that anyone knew about this. The language of the Pasuk is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was basically saying it to himself, Yom HaShem Alibo. So this was God's personal, so to speak, however you interpret that. That was his dedication at the time, but it's something that could have been subject to repeal. But then the more public version of Nevuah and Yeshaya, so that was what was enduring. But what about this mysterious phrase here, which, again, very subject to many interpretations, a little evocative of some of what we see in Parshas Bereishis, Ki Yetzer Lev HaAdam Ra Minu Ra. I'm not going to bring this about again because the Yetzer of people is bad already from childhood. So why is that a reason not to do it? Especially because that was the reason for the Mabul in the first place. The Parsha says earlier that so that was why God was destroying. So now it's a reason not to destroy. Seems like a pretty big stira. And Rav Hirsch writes that here it's meant kind of bracketed, like we talked about yesterday, brackets. It's meant to say, despite the fact that, yes, it's true that the people have this bad yetzer, but still not going to do it again. But that still seems to create a contradiction to the fact that this was the reason for the destruction in the first place. So it's possible here that this also indicates the transition into a different kind of attitude. As Soloveitchik noted, the difference of rakra and ra, that before the people are just awful, they're all bad, terrible. And now, yes, they start off bad, they're ra minu urav, but there is potential to grow. And that's actually what the word means. Nar, it means youth, but it means also something that eventually passes, that one grows into maturity and shakes off. Lina'er means to shake off. This is a theme that Rav Hirsch emphasizes here. And his eventual successor, Rav Schwab, talks about this also in his Sefer, and he says that before the Mabul, so the idea was the Yetzer Hara is just going to get worse and worse with people, but now the idea is that it should be something that is minu rav, that it's something that can be shaken off, and that there can be maturity, there can be growth, and there can be development, and perhaps that's the new phase. So the same, very similar language, which was the cause of destruction, could also be the cause of hope, or be the beginning of hope, and therefore a reason to take a different path. Did you?
There's a simple shot for that, just the idea that Hashem realized that no matter what, there's going to be evil in the world, so, you know, to sort of just come to terms with that and not get upset, because that just, people are inherently evil.
Well, it's hard to understand that kind of a hava minana maskana. So it seems much more that it's coming from something that is connecting to this idea that there is the potential to be different. And you know, I thought it could be related to something else, also interesting to think about, that we're all familiar with this whole Rashi at the beginning of the Parsha and this constant rap on poor Noah. So, yeah, he's a tzaddik, he's not a tzaddik, he's only a relative tzaddik. And it's really striking to see how Chazal are always down on him and always bringing up this issue that maybe it's only relative. And what exactly is driving that whole attitude? So we mentioned that there seemed to be this chesronos as far as just how much of a tzaddik he was. But I think it could also suggest that the machlokes about was Noach an objective tzaddik or was only a relative tzaddik, it actually connects to another question. And it goes to the core, and maybe this is why Chazal is so focused on this, it goes to the core of what was the nature of the Mabul. What was the Mabul supposed to be? Was the Mabul supposed to be, that's it, it's over, we're destroying? And if you're a real tzaddik, you don't deserve to be destroyed, you can be accepted from that. So that's what we'll see in 2 weeks with stone, right? That's the whole dialogue between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avram regarding stone. That God says, I'm wiping out stone, it's done, they're over. And Avram says, well, maybe there's a few tzaddikim, this many tzaddikim, etc., etc. But what ultimately emerges is that there's Lot. So Lot has the schus to escape, but it's not changing anything. Stone is being destroyed. Lot can be excluded from that because he has personal merit. But it's not going to change the fact that the destruction of stone means stone was wiped out. Stone was done. So what does this type of destruction mean? Does it mean that really the world should be wiped out? But Noach was such a tzaddik that he had a personal merit that he deserved to be excluded from that. Or is the idea, no, that it was always meant to be corrective, that this population needed to be wiped out. But the goal was not to end the world. The goal was to be able to rebuild the world in a more positive direction. So there had to be somebody who was going to survive. There had to be somebody who was going to be left over for the next stage. So even if that person's sidkus was only relative, that would also be enough. So there's going to be one winner. We have to find, okay, who's the best person among this population? And there's going to be a survivor, and that's going to be whoever that is. So Noah wasn't that great, but relatively compared to the rest of the world, he was a tzaddik. So therefore, he won the prize. Who it was going to be, who was going to be the survivors. I think that's a little bit the whole Shiloh there, that this focus on the tzidkus of Noah, whether it was objective or only relative, goes to that question. Is it that he deserved to be saved from the flood, which otherwise was intended to wipe out humanity? Or the point was that, no, humanity should survive somehow, and whoever it is who's the best candidate, even out of the, we think about this on election day, you pick the least bad candidate as we approach elections, very much on our minds, who's the least bad person to take to the next stage. So maybe, unfortunately, poor Noah, that was the best we could say about him, that he was a relative tzaddik, he was the least bad, but that was always part of the plan. There has to be somebody who's going to survive and take it to the next stage, and that's the nature of this whole phase of the Mabul. The Mabul wasn't meant to wipe things out and to make no future possible, but that there should be a future possibility after this. Okay, so then the Pesukim continue talking about how there is going to be a future. And Od Kol Yimei Haaretz, Zera V'Katzir, V'Kor V'Chom, V'Kayetz V'Charif, Yom V'Layla Lo Yishbosu. So on a simple Pashut level, the Pasuk saying the world now is going to keep going, the world's going to turn around, there's going to be seasons, there's going to be day and night, and things are going to keep going. And you should continue to populate it. You should continue to rebuild this world. The world's going to keep spinning. The world's going to keep going. There is a difficult concept to understand here, that in the language of Yom V'Layla Lo Yishbosu, that the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that this is to highlight that Shabbos is only for the Jews, and therefore the message is that Goyish Shabbos Chayiv Nisa, that a non-Jew is not supposed to stop. The world's supposed to keep going, and they're not supposed to break, and the notion of Shabbos is only for the Jews. So a very difficult concept to understand why that should be and how to relate to that. There's so many questions it brings up. It actually brings a practical problem for Geirim who are in the process of trying to practice Judaism, and they have to be in somewhat of a twilight zone where they have to observe mitzvot as much as possible, but maybe not keep Shabbos. It's a whole discussion, a very practical issue. Some of it draws on a literature about the Avos, because I alluded to before how Noach was for sure not Jewish, so Avos, it's a suffix whether the Avos were Jewish or not. Do we say that the Avos have mentioned, the Avos started Judaism but didn't actually have Jewish status until Har Sinai, so they were pre-Jews, proto-Jews, but they weren't actual Jews? Or do we say, no, they were Jews? So we mentioned the other day how the notion is that the Avos kept Kol Torah Kula, so what did they do about Shabbos? Not supposed to keep Shabbos, they are supposed to keep Shabbos. So there's a lot of literature about this. Rav Svengel has a lot to say about this, and say for Beis Otzer and Mishnah Melech and his drashos, Parashas Brachim. Some of the literature makes it sound like the Avos were basically briskers, and they like to try to be Yotzei Kol HaDeis, they had to figure out how could they keep Shabbos and the Mechal Shabbos at the same time. So many fascinating suggestions as to how exactly they pulled this off with tremendous creativity. But one way or another, it's a challenging concept, and it's a practically challenging concept. It's also a conceptually challenging concept. Why exactly should that be? So the Torah Tumimah has a whole interesting discussion here where he suggests that really it means that nobody should ever stop working, that the world should always be constantly developed, and batala is bad for people, and it causes chait, and it causes all kinds of problems. So ideally, the world should always keep going, people should always keep moving. But the notion that we have of a Shabbos is because that Shabbos isn't stam a break, it's a recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's influence in the world, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation. So if you're able to take that day off and infuse it with the Kedusha Shabbos, so that's where it's meaningful. But somebody who just stops, lets the world pause and doesn't really care about continuously being engaged and working it, that's going to cause problems. And I think he suggests that that language of Chayiv Misa, so we know we've never actually executed anybody for keeping Shabbos, So the notion of Chayiv Misa is a very difficult concept, a very difficult concept. Rabbi Elchanan Adler has written on this, no safer about this, with the various interpretations. And so the Torah Tumima suggests, it's more along, I think he suggests, if I remember correctly, it's more along the spirit of when we say that Mischayiv Benafsho, somebody does something, and he bears responsibility for whatever happens. So if you just pause and you just stop and you don't continue to engage with meaningful labor, so then the consequences are going to be your fault. It's going to be Mischayiv Benafsho. But if you have a concept of Shabbos, you have a concept of Kedusha Shabbos, so that is... That is something that is going to be a different category. So therefore, that's what the Pasuk is suggesting. The world has to keep moving in order to keep everybody on the right track. And if you're not somebody who's actually mitzvah and Shabbos, so then that's not the approach to take. Okay, so try to now, I said there's tremendous things coming in these next Pesukim, so I'll try to just allude to them quickly, because we've got a limited time. Okay, so we read that already. So then the next Pasuk says, Umarachem, Bechitchem, Iye, Al Kol Chaye Soaret, Al Kol Ofa Shemayim, Bechol Asher, Tirmos Adama, Bechol Dage Hayam, Yedchem Itanu, Koremes, Asher Chai Lachem, Yelba Ochla, Kirik Esav, Masati Lachem, Es Kol. So now you can eat meat. That before, we have the tradition that before the Mabul, everyone was a vegetarian, they weren't allowed to eat meat, and now there's a heter to eat meat. A lot of discussion as to why there is a change. The Sefer Maris Yitzchak, I mentioned last week by my friend by Edeltalk. So he talks extensively there about different reasons why, what was before and what was after. Sforno has a suggestion that the Mabul changed the makeup of the world. It used to be that you could get all the nutrients just from plants, and now you need the protein of the animals in order for there to be enough nutrition, or the whole task of rebuilding the world is going to require more strength and more protein, however you look at it. The Sforno has the idea that the nutrients were mixed up. If you look in the Maris Yitzchak, it talks about further ideas about what it is that changed from one step to the next, or maybe in order to be able to deal with future churban, we need the comfort that comes from meat. The Gemara says such a thing regarding wine as well. One way or another, something changed so that now there is a heter of achilas basar. But there's a limitation. Next pasuk says, "Ach basar benafsho damo lo sochelu." But you should not eat it together with its blood, which Gemara understands to mean this is the Isser of Evrim Nachai. So Evrim Nachai is basically the only kashrus-like rule that applies to all of humanity. Most of the rules of kashrus are just for Jews. But the one idea of a limitation here that applies to all of humanity is this prohibition of Evrim Nachai, which is one of the Sheva Mitzvot Menoch. And it's interesting that should be the one. Why should it be that that's going to be this core principle of morality? So presumably it connects to the fact that there is such cruelty involved in Evrim Nachai, so it doesn't just represent this one specific action, which is bad enough, but it represents a general sensitivity to cruelty, which all connects to the themes that we've seen before, that the chesed and the rachmanis that were brought towards taking care of the animals was crucial for the development of the stage. So together with that, an understanding of a prohibition of acting cruelly, but also specifically within this context of the heter achilas basar. So it's made to understand that yes, there is a hierarchy here in the world, and we don't assume that people and animals are equal, and it's legitimate for people to eat animals, but that doesn't mean that they can just do whatever they want. It means that there's a context there of how that takes place, and the notion of Tsar Bal Chaim and the idea that you have to preserve the sensitivity and the kindness and not allow one to descend into cruelty is a crucial concept. So it's necessary that these psukim be brought together. There's a heter achilas basar, yes, that's lachem yal ochla, but also understand there's a prohibition of evrim nachai. V'yachiz dimchem l'nafsho seichem edrosh, miyad kol chaya edrushanu, miyad ha'adam, miyad ish achiv, edrosh us nefesh ha'adam. So here, very significant themes. Again, this is what I said before. So the next few psukim, we're going to see some major, major controversial issues, hot button issues, contemporary issues, and maybe we'll find opportunities in the future to expand on all of these. But among the themes that are identified here is, so first of all, there is the notion of accountability for spilling blood, even as dimchem. And so the Gemara understands even suicide that one is responsible for his own life, and that there's a prohibition associated with that, and that that is something that one will be held accountable for. And it's interesting, the Ksava Kabbalah has a hari here, also the language of Umiyad Ha'adam, Miyad Yishachiv, and someone who dies at the hand of man, even the hand of his brother. So he suggests the Ksava HaKabbalah, that's to refer to brotherly killing, in other words, to euthanasia, which is very much a contemporary topic. So the idea that even if somebody were to kill someone else in a brotherly fashion, he's doing it because he's trying to be compassionate, he's trying to help him, but that's also included in this prohibition, a very tricky topic and a very complicated topic, very much relevant to a lot of contemporary discourse. But, sorry?
Also abortion.
So the next pasuk actually comes up for that. So then, like I said, so many issues packed in these psukim. And it's significant, again, because here we are rebuilding society. So society's been wiped out. Here we're starting new. So some major principles that are being laid down as far as how the world is going to be conducted from here on in, or how it should be conducted from here on in. So I'll just read these two psukim together, and I'll just comment on some of the themes that are contained within these psukim. And we'll have to explore them at future dates. But so the last two psukim can read together. Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam, damu yishafech, ki b'tzalem elokim, asa asa adam, v'atam puruvu, shirtsu v'aretz urvuva. So the last part again, emphasizing, okay, so now repopulate the world under these understandings, take over and now reconstruct. Again, this whole bridge, Aliyah, is what's this whole message so completely contained within this Aliyah. And this previous pasuk, shofech dam ha'adam, so this has even more major issues contained within it than the previous pasuk, if that's possible. So here, shofadam ba'adam ba'adam dam yishafeh, so that refers to the accountability that is necessary, that we have to recognize that murder is a terrible offense against God and against humanity. Humanity is created in the image of God, and to murder somebody is the worst thing you can do. We mentioned, I think, the other day, in different contexts, that the Rambam writes that even though as far as onshin and the like, so there are other averus that are very serious, but as far as consequentialism, as far as the impact that an avera has in the world, so there are a few averus that can compete with reticha for terrible effect and impact, and therefore this is something that has to be accountability, so much so that the pasuk says that it even makes sense to execute somebody for this, because it has to be understood that this is so consequential. So to not take action when somebody is murdered is itself a disgrace against God's image and against the sanctity of humanity. This is something which, without getting too political right now, but it's something that is very much on the minds of everyone in this particular election season, that crime has been so rampant and murder has been so rampant that it's a terrible indictment of a society that doesn't do something. Society has to respond, whether or not it means the actual death penalty, as the pasuk seems to be referring to, but even if one wants to argue that the death penalty is not necessarily the way to do it, and there's a lot to discuss about that, it's a whole other topic, but the notion that it should be ignored, the idea that there's no response whatsoever when murder takes place, so that's a complete betrayal of this message, that here the Torah is saying very clearly to all of humanity that humanity is created with Zalim Elokim, and if there's a Shvichos Dam taking place, so then there has to be a response. Society has to care, whatever form that takes, but society has to do something in order to address this, and that is very much on the minds of everyone during this election season and during this moment of difficulty for the world overall, for all the crises that are taking place, something that we have to care very much about. And then, together with that, so Chazal also do see the theme of abortion in this pasuk, and the notion of key, that it involves reading the pasuk with different punctuation, so they have to read it, put the comma somewhere else, shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishafech. So if you spill the blood of a person inside of a person, so the Gemara understands that to mean that bnei noach nara gal ubrim, that abortion is a capital crime. How exactly that impacts the whole discussion, whether it is retzicha or not retzicha, that's way outside of our time scope right now. But Chazal do attach it to this pasuk, and again, without getting too much into the politics of it, but it is just interesting to note that there are those who have argued that you can't both be pro-life and be against abortion, but also be pro the death penalty, because that's not pro-life. But we clearly understand that there's a difference, that's about innocent life, and that the death penalty, whether it's appropriate or not, but the concept is that it's about supporting the value of life also. And the Catholic Church eventually came to that position that they find it's a theory here, because now, it wasn't always the case, but now the position of the Catholic Church is pro-life, meaning no abortion, but also very strongly against the death penalty. But it's not Astira, and the biggest indication it's not Astira, as we see, it's the same pasuk, because I'll learn from the same words, that there is a notion of capital punishment for Ritzicha, and that same pasuk is also talking about the prohibition associated with abortion. So to say that there's some kind of Astira, to call yourself pro-life and be pro-death penalty, not saying what you actually should practice in terms of the complexities of how these would be carried out, but just the notion, conceptually, we see that here the same pasuk is accommodating them both. And just to quickly throw in two other issues, so the notion also that we have a greater sensitivity to in the contemporary discourse, both its violation and its appreciation, is the notion of personal dignity and of not embarrassing people. So the Ksav HaKabbalah has a comment here that this is a reference to the idea that Chazal had from other sources, that to embarrass someone is akin to murdering them. And that could also be derived from this pasuk, Dam ha'adam ba'adam. So what's another way of understanding the person within the person? So that could also mean just a person's internal sense of dignity. So the idea that there's something comparable to killing somebody if you humiliate them, so that's the internal person, and he suggests that that's also perhaps what's being alluded to here. And one last note that we'll also note is also perhaps referenced here, is this could also be relevant to the golem question, that there is, you'd be surprised just how extensive a literature there is about the question of counting a golem to a minion. And so the Chuvis about this, and the father of son Chuvis, and the Chacham Svi, and the Yavis, they both have Chuvis about this, and Chuvah about this, and the Ragachar, but Tzavtas Panech, the Chazanish talked about this, and some connected also to this pasuk. Is there a difference specifically in Adam that comes from another Adam, as opposed to the possibility of creating a person out of nothing? And similar to what we said before about looking to the Avos literature to understand issues in Geiris, so this literature, the golem, may not come up so often for us. I'm not going to put anyone on the spot how many golems we've created recently, but it is utilized in some of the contemporary discussions about cloning and all the possibilities of creating people in ways that are different from how it's traditionally happened. So could that be comparable to the literature about golems? And that therefore some of these questions have drawn from that literature, which may also be alluded to by this pasuk. So what we're left with is that there's quite a lot to unpack about this Aliyah, but that's itself a message of the Aliyah. Unpack the new goal of rebuilding the world, understand that it's not something that happens automatically, that there is a responsibility to reconstruct with an understanding of the necessity of responsibility for others, responsibility for creation, responsibility for the animals, recognizing that the decisions that we make have an impact, and that in order for there to be a new stage, in order for there to be this rebuilding, it has to be that intentionality, there has to be that sense of responsibility that comes from recognizing what went wrong and how there can be a new stage to life. And through that, Noach is able to push things forward. And of course, as we'll read in the coming parshios, we are charged with taking things even further beyond that. But this is the first step, a very significant one for us to think about, internalize, as we read this parsha, and to understand just how much we are responsible for the well-being of the world and everything within it. So I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos, to the only good things, and stay tuned. Sunday I'll